We are back, and we have a lot of new things. So, first of all, I know my audio is, it's always me. It's always on my end where it's bad, but I got these new headphones, so, and they have a mic on them, which is something I should
Listen,
have
if you
invested
never acknowledge it, then people can't roast you for it. It's fine.
in. Listen, I've been at it on myself since day one, and I never thought, oh, just get one with a
No,
visible
no,
mic so you can't fuck up. But
that's
hey,
true.
whatever. But speaking of new things, before we get into what we're talking about today, you remember how at the very beginning we were kind of bummed out that we couldn't do any of the miss the events that came in, like mystery gifts and things like that?
Yes. Well, I remember. I don't know if anybody else here does, but I remember that.
Yeah, we're kind of bummed out because like it's a decade. It's not like we can get mystery gifts that for a certain amount of time they're there and they disappeared. It's not like anyone put them on a server for us to go in and get them. But wait, they did. And I as soon as I discovered this, my mind was blown. And I want to talk about how that came to be because that became super helpful for myself and probably for Mr. Shrimp as well. Not to mention
Yes.
downright fucking amazing.
Yeah, actually, there's been it's basically opened like a whole new door because those mystery gifts are crazy good. The only thing is just that it takes forever to get one.
So, once upon a time, when a white version and black version were the newest versions, I remember playing through it and I had stumbled upon a Pokemon creator app where you could essentially hack Pokemon, shiny Arceus, Pokemon with moves that they wouldn't be able to learn, abilities they can't normally get, hacks get like one of those hack things, and transfer them into my game. And I'm like, you know what? It's a lot easier to get these Pokemon this way. And thinking about it 10 years after, I tried to look for an app like that. And I found one for Sword and Shield, not for Gen 5. I'm like, well, maybe there's one if I go on YouTube and look it up. And I stumbled upon this video, how to get mystery gifts for Gens 4 and 5. Gen 4, I'm having a bit of trouble with, but, and like, I want to do it to transfer Pokemon so that we can get certain items and two little events. But for Gen 5, it worked perfectly. And the things we got on there, amazing. I'm just gonna list off real quick the Pokemon that we got or that I got from it. I'll have a full list actually. So,
I
Mr.
can
Shrimp, what did you get so far?
so
Because
far
I spent a day
so far for
mindful.
mystery gifts I didn't do it nearly as long as Karasu did because I was a bit busy, but I was able to get a level 100 Palkia and a level 100 Dialga, crazy stuff. And I got an egg, and from what I heard, well, notably anyway, I got an egg, and from what I heard, it's either a Pidove, a Pansear, or an Axew. Now, I already have an Axew, but if it's an Axew that doesn't have rivalry, I'll actually be pretty happy with that.
Pantsage,
Oh, did I say Pansear? Oh, my bad. I thought I said Pansear.
yeah. You really need that pants here.
Because I still don't have one, but you know what? I feel like at this point it's just not meant to be.
Nah, go hunt it. Go hunt it down. You got this. You have just go in there with a swarm of fire types, and the fire will summon it. There you go.
I hope so, man.
But aside from Palkia and Dialga, I also got them. As I mentioned, I got the fullest. I just want to know that these are shiny. These are shiny Palkia, shiny Dialga. I also got the shiny Giratina that came in. The events also gave me two Mewtwo, one level 100, one level 70, with different move sets. From those events, I also got a Scrafty, so I didn't have to evolve a Scraggy, which was really nice. Ludicolo, a Cloyster, a shiny Metagross.
Nice.
These four Pokemon were from, and if I remember this correctly, from Pokemon actual people used in tournaments. I believe they won these tournaments, and that's why their Pokemon went off as mystery gifts. I also got Victini, a level 50 Victini. And separate from the Victini, I got a Liberty Pass to do that event. We'll talk about that event in another episode. I also got Meloetta and Keldeo. And then I did the same. Oh, and Darkrai. I almost forgot Darkrai. He's just sitting right there facing me in my box like, what the fuck? Smeargle was another Pokemon for sure. I have them kind of all tossed around in my boxes, so I'm not going to go deep digging. But another one that was really fun was a shiny Lavitar that so far I've gotten to Pupitar.
Nice.
Fully evolving that is going to be cool. Yeah. So, very exciting stuff. And I went into White 2, and I know we probably aren't supposed to play those until we do everything, but we can get. I got to the Pokemon Center tutorial because that's all I need to get the mystery gifts. And there, I got all of them, including Deoxys and Genesect. And then I just transfer them over. Genesect, I can't wait to talk about. I'm super excited. Deoxys was a lot of fun, but he doesn't get a cutscene. So
that, yeah, fair is fair.
But with all these mystery gifts, we can now talk about the one thing that the Pokemon League, like, that is supposedly the final challenge. And before we do, I just want to do a recap to the gyms, how you felt about the gyms, because without those badges that we earned, we can't get into the league. So, Mr. Shrimp, do you want to do a rundown of all the gyms and how you felt about them?
Man, you know, kind of wish we were going to do the segment before now, because I would have, like, prepped something. So, on the spot, I don't remember. So, it's not that all the gyms weren't memorable. It's just the Pokemon League itself. I just did it, so it stands a lot fresher in my mind. And it was much...
True.
It was a much bigger challenge for me than a lot of other stuff. But what I will say...
How about this? Favorite gym and least favorite gym?
Favorite gym and least favorite gym?
Yeah, I hate it. It just has to be your least favorite.
Let's see. There's, thinking about it, it's a lot of, there's a lot of gyms that I liked. I'll definitely say that the Striaton gym, the one where it's basically telling, teaching you basic type matchups, that one was pretty basic. So it's not very high up on my list just because it's so basic. But you got to learn that stuff at some point. And I also think that the ice gym, I didn't really like that gym, but it's mainly just because I hate ice puzzles. So I'm going to say that one's my least favorite.
Right.
My most favorite, I was going to say definitely the dragon gym, because I do like the puzzle there a lot, and how you walk up the dragons, but there isn't really too much of a puzzle aspect there. It's really just walking on like a straight route, because you can't really go any other direction.
Yeah.
I think it's... Ooh, I'm torn between the dragon gym and the... Honestly, I like the normal gym. I like the normal gym a lot. I think it was pretty cool how you had to actually... You had to think about it a little bit, and like once you solve the puzzle, then it's like there's a whole floor under it. But also, I do like the ground gym a lot, and how big and expansive it was, and how you saw like gems and dimes at the bottom. So I'm actually going to say the ground gym. That one was pretty cool.
Nice. Okay, so just as a quick rundown of the gyms, we have Straighten City, which was the first one, the type matchups with the triplets. Honestly, I really love that aesthetic. It's just like a nice small cafe. That's all it is. It's a cafe. And I really love it for its aesthetic. Lenore's gym in Korean City is that weird. It's behind the museum. It's a library behind the museum where underneath she has her room. It's not just where she battles. There are like fossils all around. I like it. I see why you love it. Honestly, if it weren't for some of the other gyms, definitely top notch. Castellia City had Berg. And I gotta say, of all the gyms, it's not that I hate him. I love him. But his gym is just you walk through honey, and as fun as the gym is in game, like that's gotta be disgusting. Like,
Yeah, you
no,
gotta come out.
I
You gotta
don't want
come
to
out
crawl through honey.
nasty on the other side, dude.
And like, what if someone gets caught halfway and they're just like suffocating because of honey? Oh God. Next, Nimbasa City, obviously my favorite. The electric type gym leader, Elisa, absolute favorite. Freaking ride roller coasters indoors. This is my gym. This one's my absolute favorite. I honestly can't remember the name of, oh, Driftvale City with Clay.
Oh yeah.
His gym.
That's
Don't know.
that
I
was a
feel like
bathroom.
I'm tying that one with Berg. So essentially, it's just like this giant vertical tower of scaffolding, and then you get at the bottom, and that's where it's really cool because it's a mining site. But like going down, it's like I need. So I have a fear of falling, like physically falling in general. So I need like solid ground, and that gym just does not do it for me.
You know what? That's respectable.
Next, Skyless Gym. I love it, but at the same time, it's super dangerous. You get shot out of cannons everywhere. And the penultimate cannon launches you into a wall. And I don't want to die. I look too good to die. I am too young to die. No.
So I don't
Bright.
like that just because I don't want to have to like physically hurt myself to get through a gym. And as cool as cannons
Yeah,
are, I
Miss
think that's
Charlton
really
City
dumb, so
Gym.
I'm all set.
Yeah, Miss Charlton City Gym is kind of violent. You're being shot into like metal walls, not safe. Icarus City with Bryson is an ice puzzle, but honestly, I love it. It's different than most ice puzzles because of the gears and stuff. And I think it's a lot of fun. And then Opelousas City, you had Drayden, I had Iris to fight, but it's the exact same dragon statues. So my absolute favorite, obviously, Elisa's gym in Nimbasa
That
City.
was a good one too.
My least favorite is, yeah, it's going to be tied between Driftvale City, which is Clay's gym, and Castellia City, which is Berg's gym. And with that, we've covered all of the gyms. But now to the Elite Four. And I want you to describe how this one's different from all previous gen.
All previous gens, you got me, homie. The only one that I know about is Gen 3.
So for every Elite Four thus far, whether it be Kanto, Johto, Hoenn, and Sinnoh, when you go in, you gotta fight them one at a time in a specific order because that's the order they're set up in. For the first time, Pokemon is introduced in Elite Four that you can challenge in any way you want, any order.
Oh, okay. So,
Yeah.
so basically with this Elite Four, which I didn't know was different from all the other ones, but with this Elite Four, you can challenge them in any order, but you have to do them all in a row, all at once. And specifically, if we did have a Pokemon champion, then you'd have to fight all four of the Elite Four members and also fight him in in one take. If you die once, then it's over and you have to restart all the way back from the beginning.
Yeah,
You
so
also
go
can't
ahead and
leave, by
describe the Elite
the
Four. They're like, no, you're stuck here now. This is your fate.
That messed me up, man. Messed me up.
Do you want to describe the Elite Four members and like what vibes you got off
All
of
right,
them?
sure.
Because they have a lot of story to tell despite the fact that they never show up except for right now.
Yeah, they actually have a lot of personality considering everything. So we're gonna start off with the ghost type Elite Four member. I was gonna say champion, but Elite Four member. Her name is Chantal, and she has ghost types. And essentially when you go into her room, you walk forward and like these will-o-wisps that represent spirits, they pick you up and like they bring you around this tower and place you right in front of her. This is going to be like a running theme where something brings you right up to the champion. And for her, she talks about how she's a writer, she's an author, and she's writing a novel. And she actually reads the beginning sentences of her novel to you. I don't exactly remember what it was because it sounded kind of hokey to me, so I didn't pay too much attention to it. But most of her character comes from the fact that for her, battling and Pokemon are an art form, and there's a lot to be gained from battling, whether it be win or lose. And as an Elite Four leader, she recognizes that A, her job depends on her being able to battle and being one of the strongest trainers out there, but B, that her writing along with her battling can inspire people, so she tries to put her all into both of them. And it's pretty cool, actually.
Actually, I just noticed something about her typing. Do you know what a ghostwriter is? I feel like that's the whole reason why she's a ghost typist.
That'd be really funny.
I'm just piecing that together. Oh my god.
Really funny, man. I'm telling you.
I'm sorry for that.
I mean, that's fine. So with her team, so her ghost type team is it's actually pretty well balanced thinking about it. Let's see, she had Cofagrigus, Golurk, a Chandelure as her ace, and I don't remember one of her other Pokemon, but there we go. Jellicent.
Water absorb.
I saw that, but I didn't really have a chance. I didn't really give her a chance to exploit it, really. She didn't hit me with Curse Body, though. But her team is basically predicated on starting the battle really well, and then, you know, just exploiting the weakness in your team that's created from you losing your lead Pokemon. And her strategy was essentially to just... She led with Cofagrigus, so if you hit it, you'd get the Mummy ability, which basically is a junk ability. It doesn't do anything other than spread itself to other people, other Pokemon. And it would hit you with Will-O-Wisp to burn you that has your physical attack and does like a 16th of your HP from... Is it a 16th or is it an 8th? I think it's an 8th, actually.
I feel like it's an 8th.
So it does an 8th of your HP every turn. So she would say that at the start of the battle, the start of anything, whether it be a battle or a novel, is incredibly crucial. So you always got to start off well. And once you get past the beginning phases, however you do it, then it's just her trying to just sweep the rest of your team and disable moves that hurt her. And I get the feeling that she's actually pretty smart. A lot of the Elite Four trainers are pretty smart, and definitely their AI is actually a lot harder than most other trainers, where they try their best to, like, they have a win condition, and they try their best to achieve that. A lot more than other trainers do. They use a lot more super effective moves. They have a lot better type coverage for things. All in all.
So how did you do against Chantal?
Chantal kicked my ass right at the start, because when I went into the Elite Four with the same mindset that I had for every other trainer, which is do super effective hits and you'll do just fine, you know. But for her, she uses a lot more status moves. She uses a lot of she inflicts your Pokemon with debuffs and takes away their abilities and uses things like passive damage and disabling moves. So she actually kicked my ass right at the start. Not to mention the fact that normally when you fight gym leaders, they have their ace Pokemon right at the end, but with the Elite Four, they can send them out at any time. Except for the beginning, they always start with the same Pokemon. So basically, Chantal, the first two attempts, she burned all my important Pokemon, and Reiki couldn't really hit her, so he would just get bodied, and then the rest of my Pokemon would just get swept either by her, by the Cofagrigus shutting them down, or the Golurk just hitting them too hard. So I had to come back. I had to come back with a new team, a new strategy of taking out, not only disabling that Will-O-Wisp, like finding some way to shut it down, but actually being able to do enough damage with Kofi Grigas to get it out of the way so I could just sweep the rest of her team with Crocodile, and that actually worked out pretty well.
Right.
It was a tough fight, but it worked good.
Honestly, Chantal for me would have been an easy sweep with Percy, except for the fact that her Jellicent has water absorb, and three of his moves were water.
And that's why we get coverage, baby.
So, yeah, and the only coverage move I had, I believe it was Mega Horn that I was running.
Oh, that is tough.
Actually, before we talk about, yeah, it was not super effective on the ghost type. But actually, I want to talk about our teams real quick before we talk about the rest of the Elite Four. What was your team going in?
So we had, well, I had the team of, let's see. So we did, I'm actually going to lose this trainer battle. That's crazy. So I had Reiki.
Oh, no, yeah. Super high.
Ricky, my Crocodile. I had Vilia, my Virizion. I had Cherish, my Chandelure. And then Tornadus and Cobalion. But those two did absolutely nothing. You know those Pokemon that you send out just so you can heal your actually better Pokemon? That's what I did with those two, because they did.
Use Legendary.
Because I sent out Tornadus, and I tried to have him hit one of the Pokemon during the fighting type gym leader. This bitch knew Stone Edge.
Right.
So he just took out Tornadus. So I was like, ah, shit. All right, I guess there goes that. And then I tried him on the dark type leader, and he did no damage, and then just got bodied. And I was like, you know what? All right, bro. I'll come back for you.
All right, so my team going in was Percy the Samurott, Lumiere the Chandelure. I used the three swords of justice, which I named after the respective musketeer that they were named after, or that they were based off of, because the three swords of justice are based off of the three musketeers. And I went in with Thundurus, and if I hadn't turned my system off, I could tell you what its nickname was. I just don't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, four legendaries, because incredible base set totals. And my two overly trained level 63 plus ace Pokemon. Chandelure and Samurott were ready. Needless to say. But the next Elite Four member is actually made her debut in the Battle Frontier and Sinnoh games. Do you want to talk about her now?
The next Elite Four member? So since you said she, you're talking about the second type leader, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Caitlin.
So with her, she's actually on like some kind of like Stardust like highway thing. I'm not too sure about what was going on there, but she basically levitates you. Like she basically you go into her Stardust way, and then you get levitated up towards her. She gets out of bed, and she well, for one, she has a bed in her Elite Four chamber. What? And then she gets up and comes and like greets you and says like, she got out of bed for this, so like don't waste her time with a boring battle. Give it your all and all that stuff. And I'm like, you bitch, what the hell? Like what? Why are you sleeping on the job, dude?
Mr. Shrimp, you just woke her up from a nap. You just woke her up from a nap, and she probably took a nap after fighting N. Like, you know how you go into random places and you sleep on the bed,
what?
And that's how you recover?
This is her job. Like, why is she asleep?
She will. Because in Pokemon, there are places where you go in, you rest on the bed, and dun, dun, da, da, dun, you're all healed. Like, she was
like
recovering.
Five, she has like
and you woke her up from
restores.
A nap.
You have max revives. You can use those too. What? Listen, I'd be at the salt bay. But so basically, like,
yep,
you start off with her, and I'm not gonna lie, this was a sweep with Crocodile, because Crocodile, a lot of psychic types, to preface, so a lot of psychic types have really high special defense but really low regular defense. This isn't the case for all psychic types, but it's a general rule of thumb that that's usually how it goes. And Crocodile mine has Moxie, which is your attack gets increased one stage every time you take out a Pokemon. And basically, for every one stage of attack, you do 50% more damage. So I'm going in with a dark type versus a psychic type leader. And every time I get a kill, I get 50% more damage. So, like, what's it called? So after so she leads with Reuniclus, and I take him down in two hits. Actually, no, I take him down in three hits because she used a full restore.
Jesus.
I used Foul Play, which does more damage the more attack a Pokemon has, but it has a base power of 95, so it's actually still really, really strong. So I crit it. Hell yeah, dude.
Plus stat boost.
So I crit it, and then it lives. She uses a full restore, and then I hit it twice more with Foul Play, and it gets bopped. Then I get my one stage of attack, you know? Then she comes out with Sigilyph, which knows Ice Beam for some reason. Okay.
That's not good for you.
But it was also inconsequential, because I was able to... I just hit it with Foul Play. I hit it with Foul Play and then Rock Slide. Took it out for free. And now I'm at double attack and nobody can stop me. Then she brought out her Musharna. That was free. She didn't even hit me. She kept trying to seal my moves. And I'm like, dude, it's... Why would I have any of the same moves that you do? And then her last Pokemon... I don't remember what her last Pokemon was. I just know that it got... Huh?
Gothitelle. Gothitelle, or whatever the final evolution is.
Easy. How about yourself?
Jesus. I mean, she's the reason why I had Megahorn on Samurott. Because bug types are super effective on Psychic, and I, with the team, I was running three fighting types.
Yeah, that would hurt.
No, sir.
To be honest, I'm sure she actually does have...
That would hurt.
I'm sure her strategy is crazy. It's just my Crocodile is... I think it has a plus speed nature, and I EV trained it, quote-unquote. But I definitely made sure to give it, like, a lot of speed-increasing items. So I was able to outspeed a lot of things, and Crocodile just hits like a truck anyway.
So yeah, my strategy for her was like Mega Horn, just straight up Mega Horn. Also, how I beat Chantel, I didn't say because Percy was not doing it with the water moves. It was actually Chandelure, even though it wasn't very effective. A new Energy Ball, grass is super effective on water.
We take those.
Bye bye.
We take those, man.
Yes. Speaking of taking them, Marshall. I guess as a quick sum for him, his mentor is Alder, the current champion of Unova.
Oh, that's
about it. I don't want to dive too deep.
Yo,
yeah,
he's
a fighting type guy.
Up. I'm not gonna lie, he was definitely the one that gave me the most trouble. After I got past Chantal, he was the one that actually messed me up a lot. Because his fighting types know a lot of good coverage moves, and his sock has sturdy. So he's living whatever you're hitting him with. Like, a lot of his Pokemon come with Stone Edge so that they can counter fighting types. So they thought ahead for that. They have that.
Right.
They have... So Sock has another move called Storm Throw that guarantees a critical hit. So it's going to bypass any stat changes and stuff like that. It's going to... I think it also has plus priority. Either that or he's just really fast. Or we had like a speed tie or something. But yeah, man, that move actually did some damage. He actually took down my Virizion with it. It's just because like I didn't have anything that hit him super effectively. So it's basically just us just scrapping, just swapping hands back and forth, seeing who could take down the other one. Because he hit really hard and my Pokemon hit really hard. But his Pokemon were a lot tankier than my Pokemon, so I had to be smart about what I was using and when.
Right.
Crazy.
I mean, I don't know why your pure flying type would not do the job. Your pure flying legendary, whose base stat total should be enough to oak everything.
You want to know why? Throw was like,
I don't know what.
Funny. And just stone it. Critical hit. Die.
It just did you wrong. Honestly, Stone Edge would have been a problem considering I was using the counterpart to Tornadus, which is Thunderous and Electric Flying type. On it, it should have given me trouble, but I outsped.
We take those.
Yo, like, thank God I outsped. I take those. And instead of him attacking with his Sturdy Sock, he recovered. I broke Sturdy with Thunderbolt, which wasn't enough to kill, but it also wasn't enough for him to heal. And, like, that's it.
Let's also
game, set, match.
Oh, well, before we move on,
the next is my
let's
favorite.
Also talk about how...
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
When you actually go into the fighting type leader's, like, room, it's a big, like, it's a big wrestling arena.
Oh, didn't describe that.
That was actually pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah.
He's also big. Yo, he's this huge dude, man. Like, he's... God dang, dude. He's actually, like massive, bro. He... Oh,
yeah, the way you get spiral staircase, this weird conveyor belt thing, you hop on and it conveyors you all the way up, and
it does.
It looks
like
kind of rickety.
The other ones, like with Chantal, you're getting lifted by the spirits. They're not going to draft you unless they're feeling really bad that day. In the psychic type gym leader, it's not gym leader. In psychic type elite four member. As long as they don't break concentration, you're gonna be okay. But with that one, it's like, yo, if those contraptions bust, you're dead.
Like, she's
sorry, homie.
Last but not least is my favorite Elite Four member in this generation, that being Grimsley, the Dark type specialist. And oh my god, it's just the typing. I love Dark types. Not my favorite types, but definitely up there in the top three. And freaking his room just has this nice, elegant, gothic aesthetic going up on this almost red velvet carpet thing. And on top of that, he has a dark story, hence the typing. He lost all his family. He was like the heir to this rich family, and he lost all their fortune gambling. And somehow he became an Elite Four member. So you know what? He's probably making bank now.
Dang,
probably. Yeah. So, yeah, Grimsley is
honestly not
that hard.
I feel bad for him.
Three fighting type legendaries.
Okay, so he got kind of raw. He got kind of a raw deal because he's a dark type in a generation with three fighting type legendaries, all of which you can get before now. Reiki exists, you know, like Pig Knight, he just exists. That hurts a lot. You know, bug type moves actually just got a really big buff this generation. Like, they got a lot of new bug type moves, and those hurt dark types a lot. You know? So it's definitely not the best thing for him, but you know, I still had a fun time fighting him. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, he had a very balanced team.
Let's see. So he had Scrafty, Dark Fighting type. He had. He also had
Perlock,
Pure
Dark,
Bisharp, Steel Dark type, and
Bisharp, Dark,
and the Crocodile,
and
Crocodile.
Just like you.
It was not. Well, it's safe to say that because Reiki hits so hard, he's fighting type, and also outsped most of his Pokemon, that it was a pretty clean sweep.
I think it's very safe to say that Grimsley just didn't have a fighting chance.
It's funny because he has a fighting type. He has a fighting
he's
type.
Weak.
That's
yeah, he does, type. But it's still all of his Pokemon are... And then two of his Pokemon that have coverage types are like four times weak to
ground
fighting.
Is
ground weak
but
to fighting?
Steel is.
I think so.
So his Bisharp four times weak to fighting. His Bisharp.
Yeah, Bisharp is like
a lot if you let it. But unfortunately, I had three speed boosts because my pig knight still knows flame charge. So I had three speed boosts, and hammer arm just came for his life.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so after we beat the Elite Four, there's this giant... So the way the Elite Four works in this generation, instead of being you go into a building, here's one room, so on and so forth. There's this center area that branches off into the four respective members' rooms. And as you beat them, this little hexagon thing in front of the entrances glows. When all four glows, the statue in the middle of the room gets this amazing blue glowing aura. And you go step on it, and it brings you down to this immense and giant and never
Yo, you can't even ride your bike in there, man.
Staircase. No, you got to go up there step by step as if fighting Team Plasma, as if getting your badges, as if traveling with your best friends and fighting the Elite Four wasn't sacrifice enough. Now I gotta lose even more carbs getting up these damn stairs.
The room so when you go down into the next part of the league, it just places you in the middle of this massive room with like six sets of stairs, and you have to walk each of them. And they're big. They're actually like they're really, really big. So you're walking up all this stuff, and eventually you get to the next room where you're supposed to be, where you're supposed to be meeting the champion. And guess who's there to see us? And got ahead of us and just whooped somebody's ass. It's Anne.
It's our true rival. Ideal rival?
He is...
At this point, he's just a rival.
He is definitely...
He's one of us.
But now he's gonna be my bitch. Because this dude is... Yo, man. This dude is wigging out. He's been going nuts this whole game. But especially like this later half. Trying to realize his dream, he has gone way off the deep end, especially with his plan. Yeah,
he's
man,
slowly
it's,
descending
it's pretty
madness.
Bad. I'm like, dude, you gotta calm down. But he does not, and in fact, he ramps it up. So we get into the room, right? And we see that N just beat Alder, and he's rubbing it in his face, which is like wild to see from N. Who was just like pretty neutral. Oh. What's up?
You know what that feels like to me? So in Kanto and the original Kanto games and their first remix, Fire Red and Leaf Green, like your rival Blue just became champion and then you beat the Elite Four and walk
Yo,
in and you're like, hey, guess what?
Is, that's actually exactly what you do. He wasn't even champion for
like.
5 seconds.
In either situation, in Kanto or Unova, like N slash Blue is just champion. You walk in there like, hey,
what up?
Me.
But yo, man. So he just beat Alder, and he said, "Yo." So he says that. I'm not trying to mince his words, but I do want to like respect everybody's time. So he basically says that. That now because he beat the Pokemon champion, the Pokemon champion has to go and tell everyone that they have to release their Pokemon. He has to do it now. And Alder's like, no, please, you can't do that. But you can't. That's terrible. No, not the Pokemon. And N's like, we put both of our ideals on the line, and I won, and you lost, and a loss is a loss. Eat that. Hold it. And now I'm going to show you from the top of my castle that I'm gonna tell everybody to release their Pokemon because I just beat their strongest warrior, and Alder's like, "No, wait!" And I'm like, "Yo, what?" So then, in cutscene, yeah, man. So outside
speaking
of
castle
League, buildings yeah. and like castle walls start popping up literally from the ground, and what that tells us is that Team Plasma has been taking Pokemon from people, and this is also explained inside the castle, but Team Plasma has been taking people's Pokemon away and building these giant structure under the Pokemon League for years. For a really long time, they've been planning this for N to find the legendary dragon, to beat the Pokemon champion, and to pop this around the Pokemon League and send like Drogon in it to attack it. So they pierce the Pokemon League from all sides with the castle drawbridges. And from there,
yeah,
it's pretty crazy.
Like, this place is amazing.
And it's like, it's huge. Like, the Pokemon League is already on top of a mountain, but these things are like 3-4 times the height, and it completely encompasses the Pokemon League. So it's really, really big. And we smash cut back inside where one of the drawbridges is actually destroyed the Pokemon League champion, like the altar where he's supposed to be crowned as champion. And N is there standing right next to
the alder,
is standing right next to one of the drawbridges, and he says that, you know, he's now the strongest trainer because he just beat the champion, but fate still needs to be decided. So, you know, player, just come up and face me in my own castle on my own turf. And then he goes to the drawbridge and just goes away. And so Alder and... Oh, go on. Sorry.
And I... and I gotta say, like, I love this. So essentially, as you were going to say, Alder...
Yeah, Charon comes in too.
And I believe Charon comes in at this point. And he's like, go face him, do your thing. Because, like, at this point, we're the hero. There's two heroes that are meant to exist, and the player character. And when we go up there, we see 6 of the 7 sages, you know, everyone but Getsis, because Getsis already revealed he's a big bat. And they're like, listen, you're not coming out of here alive. And my initial thought when I was first playing this was, I can probably take them all on one at a time. There's 6 of them. I could probably heal. And the moment I'm thinking this, and this is an amazing moment, every single gym leader, except for the straightened trio, because, you know, they're waiters, they got to work extra long hours. Every single gym leader, from the second gym all the way to the 8th, including both Drayden and Iris, because, you know, there's only one of them that you face, depending on which version, up here, and there's 7 of them, and they're like, listen, this is our home. This whole region is our home. And I don't think I've ever seen a game like this where it's like gym leaders leave their gyms and venture more than like a city away. In this case, some of them are making it from the other side of the map. These are the gym leaders from all corners of the region coming together to save your life. And they're like, okay, go. And as it turns out, Bianca didn't make it to the Straighten Brothers. She just didn't have time. I guess she never taught her Pokemon fly. It takes 2 seconds. Got an X chance. You have a phone on your watch. You can call them.
It was a busy
3
Sunday.
At a time. Let's go. Get this shit done.
The waiter's got to wait. Potatoes got to potato, homie.
And yeah. And N's castle is huge. So I'm just going to... A lot of them are just like members of Team Plasma. Some of them are rejoicing. Some of them are questioning the morals. But there's 2 rooms I want, or 3 rooms I want to talk about really
real
quickly.
Before
the first
we
one,
actually move on too far ahead from the gym leaders, I did want to point something out. That a lot of the Getsis members, a lot of the Team Plasma like Sage members, they're talking about how they've been waiting for this for years, possibly even decades, and how we're not going to ruin it. But a lot of the gym leaders talking about how those are really shitty reasons to want to fight for this, to fight for this cause, like the world domination, and especially dominating this region specifically because it's their home, makes them want to fight, and that's the reason that they're going to lose. That Team Plasma is going to lose because now you brought the entire region together just to fight you, so that's not really going to fly. And I thought that was pretty cool. And I also
it's
hammer
a,
home
it's a really cool moment. I love
haven't
that.
Seen another game that. Like, I've seen a lot of Pokemon games, but this I don't haven't played one where the gym members actually have like a role in the story where they don't just they're not just static people that just here's a gym badge, all right, I'm done with the rest of my character. Like, they actually go around and they do things and they act like regular people would, you know, like they're pretty learned and they're pretty sophisticated.
Yeah.
So when they're challenged on stuff, they don't just shut down like a lot of Team Plasma members do. They actually think about it and come to their own conclusions, and they're like, okay, well, you're stupid, but the reason why you're stupid is XYZ. Like, you know.
Yeah, these characters are a little more developed, are a lot more fleshed out, because in other games, yeah, you get like a scene here or there, but this is the whole story. And before we talk about the rest of it, this app is going to cut us off in like 15 minutes. So I want to cut it off and do like a part two right away, so that we still have lots of time to fully talk about everything without this cutting us off later.
All right, in the so big scenes yet right to
come.
Now. Yeah.
So I'm going to set
back. All right.
Back.
All right, cool.
All right, so there's reached what's known as End's Castle after defeating the Elite Four. And after End defeated the champion Alder. And there were three rooms that I really wanted to talk about. The first one is where you can access your PC. And this is important because, you know, you just maybe you want to swap parties before battling End. Or maybe, like me, you want to put Thundurus in the box so you have an extra slot for an upcoming legendary. But this room, there's a bit of story that's tied into it, or it ties into the main story. Why is there a random PC box or thing, PC computer, in End's Castle? And the reason is because they found a way to encrypt and get into every single trainer's thing so that they can liberate the Pokemon from the PC.
That's evil. Yo, that was when it, so we were not we were, but so I was looking at that and that's crazy, you know? Like,
it's hilarious.
I think for one, I think that would be amazing technology for people who aren't gonna go back to those games and release the Pokemon from their boxes. I think that's fine. But for me, bro, you know how long it took me to catch Virizion? I'm not able to give that up. Are you serious? Dang, so, man, that's what people ever to get her.
I watched, I think it was, well, it was on Facebook. I think it was a Dorkly video where it's saying if trainers were smart, and instead of catching all the Pokemon, this guy who's talking to Scyther, they're in a Pokemon Center at the PC. And Scyther's like, hey, boss, what are you doing? He's like, well, literally every Pokemon that every trainer owns is in here, and you could just plug it in your flash drive and download them all. And Scyther goes, haha, they should have had two, I think it was a two-process authentication. And I'm like, honestly, with Team Plasma doing this, they probably should.
They, yeah, actually. Like,
why has literally no one else thought about this?
Like, geez, man, it's crazy. And
it's hilarious.
I think, so that technology right there is one of the reasons why, like, if you had the technology to basically release all of the Pokemon in the entire... Okay, so one region is fine, but you can scale that up to be the entire world, you know?
You can.
And you can just release all of the Pokemon ever caught in any PC ever at once. That would be an an insane, like, explosion of Pokemon. Just to be, just like out, just either looking for their trainers or wreaking havoc, like
Pokemon into Digimon. That's how it works. They become corrupted files and become Digimon.
There you go. That's where Digimon came from. It's a Pokemon offshoot.
I like Digimon.
Digimon is good.
We can talk about that for another day, though. So the second room I wanted to talk about was this room where it's filled with toys and basketball hoop and a skateboard ramp. This is End's room as he grew up. And aside from like the rare candy that's there, nothing happens in the room. But seeing where End grew up in this super isolated castle buried underneath a mountain, I can kind of understand why there's a lot of like resentment and distrust and things like that. He just never socialized. This was his socialize.
honestly, it's kind of sad, to be honest, because he, if you look into the room and you look at all the stuff that's in there, it's a bunch of new unused toys. So, like, yes, he used some of the stuff, but, like, you can see, like, he has, like, a train set that he broke and he didn't know how to fix it, so he just left it. There are trains scattered about all over the room. He throws a train, a model train, up into the basketball hoop, but he gets it stuck in there so he can't use the basketball anymore. He doesn't play with the rest of any of his toys. The only...
You know what I hate?
Yeah, what's up?
They have a skateboard ramp, but they won't let you use your bike indoors.
He has on a route skateboard three, in there. I don't know why they don't let you just use that.
Route 3, right next to the daycare, they have swings that you obviously can't go on. But there's a slide that you can bike up and down. You can bike up the stairs and down. You can bike up and down the slide. But I can't bike on the skateboard ramp where it's more appropriate.
That's funny. That's just funny.
Hate it.
But yeah, so to get back on topic real quick.
Yeah, back to that room, because I do have one more after that before we talk about the big happenings.
So back to that room. So basically the way that you were gonna go look at other rooms anyway, like, well, at least I would hope so. Most people were gonna look at all the rooms anyway, but a Shadow Triad member tells you that he doesn't feel anything when he goes into that room, nothing at all. Like, he doesn't feel anything, period, and he especially doesn't feel anything going into that room, but maybe you will. And so he lets you go, you know, and so you go into that room.
Yes.
And
I feel extreme dislike for that ramp that I can't properly use.
Well, there you go. There, you're feeling something. Now that was the point. That was the point.
This is anger.
But yeah, so it kind of sucks, you know. And we also hear we also hear the Shadow Triad members basically train the emotions out of themselves. That's neat.
Yeah, they're weird. So essentially, the Team Plasma itself has this chivalrous medieval knight aspect, and then you have three ninjas.
Yep. That's it.
But the third. That's it. But the third room I want to talk about, there are two sisters. One was based off of the goddess of love and the other the goddess of wisdom. And I remember that because I saw it on the wiki and I'm like, oh my god, that's so cool. But these sisters were brought in by Getsith to essentially raise N, even though they were very young at the time as well. And they talk about how N couldn't understand the heart of people. Rather, he understood the hearts of Pokemon, and he spent a lot of time with Pokemon growing up. One of them just heals your Pokemon, and the other one talks about N growing up. And that hurt.
Yeah.
That was a different type of feel. That's a different type of hurt than the stupid, amazing ramp that I could just bike up.
That does kind of suck. Although I didn't know where their names came from. I don't know that it was like based on that sort of thing. That's cool.
Yeah, one is based off of Athena. The other, I can't remember. And I can't remember her name aside from the fact that it starts with a C. But I believe it's based off of Cupid. I could be... I'm, like I said, I don't remember her name right now, so that's probably super wrong. But
yeah,
they are based on love and wisdom, as in the love it takes to essentially raise a child and the love that they felt for N because they were practically family, and the wisdom to grow up and take charge and do what he's destined to do.
Mm-hmm. All right. Speaking of N, do you want to do you have anything more you want to say? Or you want to go over to the big thing?
I think it's time for the big thing.
All right. Lead the way.
So once you reach the final room, as it is in the beginning of the Bible, Getsis is there, and you know, because he's based off of the chapter
of Genesis, Getsis. That's where he gets his name. So Getsis is there, just like he was in the very beginning. And he says, despite the fact that he was, like, before trying to kill us off, he says, go, he taunts us, go in there and fight N. And we go in. And there's this amazing throne room. It's gorgeous. There's water on the side. At the end of this long walkway is a magnificent throne. And is like, he goes on talking about his beliefs. And he summons his dragon. In my case, it was Reshiram. In Mr. Shrimp's case, it was Zekrom. And with their summon, they break through the wall and through the amazing throne. And that ticked me off just a little, I'm going to admit.
Same, dude.
But it's this amazing... Like, why are you going to build a castle with an amazing throne meant for your rightful ruler, and if you're just going to smash through it?
Why?
No.
Why didn't you just have the Pokemon in the room when it was happening?
Why didn't you make a window for him to just pop
exactly.
in?
Exactly. I was like, yo, he broke through the wall, and out loud, I was like, yo, there was so many other ways you could have done that. Why?
Like, just pop him out of your Pokemon. But it's this amazing cutscene, nonetheless.
Yeah.
And right before direct confrontation, the stone, whether it's the light stone in Pokemon Black or the dark stone in Pokemon White, it reacts to that energy and out appears, I'm going to talk about it from my perspective, from the ball, this black energy is swirling around and slowly Zekrom emerges from it. And it's going to be the exact opposite for Mr. Shrimp's case, with the white energy and Reshiram emerging.
Yep.
And as soon as they emerge and they release energy from where the stone was, all the water has evaporated. It's gone. And standing before us is our respective dragon. And that is an amazing cutscene. Like, ever since N's castle appeared, the cutscenes have been getting better and better. And the music, oh my god. Were you listening to the music when this happened?
So the music, there's only one song that I genuinely dislike. All of the music has been very, very good up to this point.
Right. But to be honest, like, yeah, and it's time to catch our respective legendary. And as soon as it said, a wild Zekrom appeared, Master Ball.
Alternatively, since I already used my Master Ball on Tornadus, I did a quick ball, almost caught it in that second try. I threw a Premier Ball and I caught it in that, and I was like, that's hot. That's so sick. Yo, man, it's actually...
Yeah, the Premier Ball is the same thing as a Pokeball. It's just like a bonus because you bought 10 Pokeballs. And it's hilarious because, like, it's this white ball, pure white. And catching the white Pokemon with it is amazing.
That's why I was saying, yo, man, that's hot, man. I like that.
I don't know how you did it.
I don't know how I did it either, but we take those.
Congrats. And just like every other team that we faced N with, these are absolute new Pokemon. We've never seen him use before. He's got his dragon. He's got the two fully evolved fossil Pokemon, Zoroark. And I can't remember what else he has.
So he has the dragon. He has Karakos. Well, he had Karakos for me, so one of the fossils.
Zoroark. No, he has both of them.
And what?
He has both fossil Pokemon on both teams.
Oh, well, cool. Zoroark and... He had a full team of six Pokemon. I don't know why I'm having trouble remembering.
I don't know.
Well, it wasn't too bad. That one was fine. Real quick. So in case you didn't heal before, I mean after you caught your dragon, he heals your team for you because he says that a fight when you can't fight at the fullest isn't a real fight, which you know that's nice chivalry. I respect it.
Yeah, he's like he's a weird rival. He's a rival. He's like not a douchebag. He respects us.
He respects us enough to not be an asshole about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, his battle was honestly pretty great, and at the end of it I felt this nice relief, because as soon as everything was said and done, his asshole father walks into the room and just bitches on about how he's just this terrible son who couldn't complete the one thing he was born to do.
That was so funny, dude.
Yeah, and then Getsis is like, well, I guess it's time to kill you. And he battles us with this absolutely unfair team. Mr. Shrimp, take the lead from here.
So his team is actually really strong. A lot of his team is really high level. A lot of his team actually has been trained very, very well. The main thing that really got me was his ace Pokemon, which was Hydreigon.
Which is super underleveled.
As a lot of people know, Hydreigon is a pseudo legendary. So it has crazy high stats. Not as high as a regular legendary, but it does have pretty high stats. But it was four levels above Reshiram, which was my dragon, and it outsped her, so it hit her with Dragon Pulse, took her out in one hit, and then it also knew Surf, Earthquake, and
Frustration.
So it was a beast, man. That thing was tearing through my team like a hot
butter. Mind you, it's underleveled and it's still overpowered.
I don't know how they did that, but they did it.
Because they kept their base stat totals the same.
God, dude, it was just nuts. It was just nuts. So that thing hurt like that thing hit like a truck. And I don't remember what his first Pokemon was, but it actually toxicked my dragon.
I believe it's a Semitoad.
Oh, a Seismitoad?
Seismitoad, yeah. He has Seismitoad, Bouffalant, Electros.
Oh, I remember Electros, yeah.
Hydreigon, and I can't remember the other two he had.
I don't know why I'm so much difficulty remembering, but yeah,
it just happened for you. But you also just woke up, so
it do be like that.
And honestly, Getsis is a very complex character, and this is when we see it the most. It's right before he attacks us. This perfectionist. This narcissistic, god-complexed, built-up guy is watching his plan fall apart. And after you defeat him, it's just absolute madness for him. And Alder and Charon do this civilian arrest thing and take him away. And then we're left with N. And you know how I hated that thing that happened in front of the Ferris wheel? That cutscene that just looks like it's only his mouth moving?
They do it again. They do it twice, actually.
They do it again. I don't like that. But we finally reached the end of the main story of Pokemon Black and White. And despite the fact that he's still in conflict with everything he was raised in, he wants to make amends. He wants to make amends for everything he's done. And he wants to seek out how things really are. He realizes that his way of thinking isn't how things are for everyone. And he wants to go on his own journey to explore that and challenge his beliefs. And has grown from the time we saw him, just like our other two rivals, Charon and Bianca, and has grown a lot. But at the end of the day, the reason why everyone loves him as a rival, why even though he's not an official rival, everyone goes and looks at him as the true rival of the story, is because we can relate. He's just a sad boy in a world that he doesn't understand.
He's a very, very sad
boy. He's been told that everything is this way. And when people challenge that, he's been raised isolated, hailed, worshipped, but he's misunderstood. And when people challenge his understandings, he doesn't know what to do.
So he rejects it.
And honestly, that's 2020. We were challenged with everything from politics to the pandemic itself. new ways of forming our society, and we don't know what to do. And it's 2020.
Was this entire playthrough literally just being like, dang, and it's 2020 for it? Is was that it? Was this like the greatest bait of a lifetime?
Well, no, but like, he is relatable, and a decade later after these games were made, he is still relatable. So I'm honestly excited to see what happens in the post game. I'm excited to see in the next game, which is Black 2 and White 2. But before we talk about Black 2 and White 2, how did you feel about the main story? Because we still have post-game and stuff like that. But how did you feel about the main story of Pokemon Black and White?
Just before I talk about that, I did want to mention that when you beat N, his whole world kind of shatters right there. Because he was supposed to be the hero, the sole hero that was supposed to save Unova from itself. And that did not turn out the way that he planned. Because we kind of just kicked his ass with the other dragon.
Yeah, he kind of realizes he's a villain. He's like, oh, shit.
So all at once, he starts piecing together. He starts piecing everything together in his mind. And he realizes, wait, I'm not the only hero. Wait, if I'm not the only hero, that means that the... So he was seeking ideals in my game. So he said, if I'm not the only hero, then... ideals aren't the only way. Can truth also be like, what is true? Is it just truth, or are ideals true too, or are they like hand in hand? Wait, like, you know, it's dots that connect over and over again in his head, and he's like, eventually comes to the conclusion, like, ah, shit, I fucked up. And so
I guess the main theme of the story,
so he realizes that he messed up. And from there, he's like, all right, he basically puts his money where his mouth is and releases Zekrom and lets Zekrom just do whatever he wants. Like, because that was his whole thing. He wanted to release Pokemon, but not only did he realize that his way isn't the only way, he's also hypocritical if he holds on to anything like that. So he releases Zekrom.
In my game, he just jumped on the dragon's back and flew out the giant new window.
I did not see that. That did not happen in my game. He releases Zekrom outside the window. And he's like, all right, I'm going to talk to hero to hero. Like, there's a lot of things that I've done and a lot of people that I've hurt. But I gotta make amends for it. So, like, go have, like, enjoy the rest of your journey. I have to go on a journey myself. And so he leaves the room. Zekrom flies off and the game ends. And it's actually really cool to see that. But overall, so with the story, I think this game has a wonderful story. I don't know why people were ragging on it so much. Like, yes, it's kind of heavy on exposition right at the start, but I don't know a game that isn't really heavy on exposition at the start. Well, actually I do, but that's not the point. The whole point of this game was to tell a very cohesive narrative, and I think they did that really, really well. A lot of the characters developed over the course of the game, and they grew, and they realized things about themselves that they wouldn't have if they didn't go on a journey. And some of them had to come to terms with it. Like Bianca, she wanted to be just as strong as me and Sharon, but that was not her role in life, and she learned that, and she came to terms with it and accepted it, you know? Like, she came to terms with the fact that her dad is overprotective, but she can't let that...
Abusive.
Supposedly overprotective, allegedly. She can't let him stop her from living her life, you know? Chan wanted to be strong, and he realized that dream, but he didn't know what to do with it. Until he continued on and met Alder and was like, all right, maybe I should think about long term what I'm gonna do with all this, because having strength for no reason means nothing, you know. A lot of the gym leaders learn stuff. I learned stuff too. It's like a lot of the characters. And what I learned is that Pokemon can actually be kind of tough. Like, this is like the first Elite Four thing that I fought where I actually had to like
stop and think about my strategy. You know, I learned a lot more about like the battle mechanics and stuff. And even then, is like, it's just been a really, really good story. I liked it, like thoroughly enjoyed that. The only thing I didn't like was fucking Getz's theme was garbage. I hated that theme. That thing was terrible.
So for me, this game was very nostalgic. As you guys know, I've already played it once. So coming back and playing it, there was a tinge of nostalgia. I chose the same starter because it was my favorite. I went to a generation that I loved, a region that I loved. And going back and rediscovering a lot of things, it all felt very new, despite the fact that it's 10 years old and I've done it before. It all felt very new. And so at first, I wanted to go in with dark theories and twists. And if you guys notice, the more the story progressed, the less my theories darkened. Actually, the most recent one was the one about Opelousas City, the dad and the son. And that one was more hopeful than anything else. So as the story progressed, and like you said, characters develop, they grow on you, they expand. And at the end of the day, it's this timeless manner that they do so. Yes, they're inserted into this fictional world, but they're coming at it at an angle where the questions that they raise can be applied to the world no matter where you are, no matter when you are. And it's that tang of realization, of realism. That's what I love, and that's what makes it so great. That's the story that they're telling, not the one that you're playing. I mean, obviously, yes, the one that you're playing. But the real story they're telling is the one that you bring into realization as you're playing it. These questions that you ask, you find yourself asking in real life. Are these things okay? Is my way of thinking the best way of thinking, or does it conflict with others? And I hate to circle back to 2020 like I did before, but with N, it was more of a joke. And if you think about the things today, bring up those moral questions. Like, I don't want to get political or anything like that, but let's talk about masks for a second. Some people, like myself, you know, I say put on your mask, whatever you got to do to feel safe. Some people don't. And that's a big thing that comes into conflict. That's an idea that someone has in conflict with the idea of someone else. And that's the core of this game. It's presenting your truth and ideals versus the truth and ideals of someone else. And it kind of puts things into perspective. And honestly, I'm glad that, Mr. Shrimp, that you love this game as much as I do.
This game is definitely like really good, like really, really good. One of the things I was kind of worried about was definitely going to be the length of this game. Just because I've been, as people know, I've been in school and working at the same time. It has not been easy. So finding time in order to actually sit down and play this game and do something I enjoy has been tough, but I have been able to. So it has been tough, but it's definitely been an experience and one I won't forget for a really long time. And it's been pretty good.
Yeah. So now I want to break down, and usually we talk about, should we do this in the next episode, this, and that. The next thing that most people don't cover when they do playthroughs is the post game. But I think the post game is important. It's fun, obviously. A lot of things are going to happen, but there's not a lot of story. I feel like now there's more time for us to explore and relax. So next few episodes, we're going to cover the events that occur with our event Pokemon. We're going to talk about a lot of post-game. And before we get into Black 2 and White 2, between Black and White and Black 2 and Black and White 2, there's a two-year gap. So we're going to talk about what we think is going to happen, what changes we notice right away, and things like that. And then we're gonna, you know, play through the main story of Black 2 and White 2, and then the post game of Black 2 and White 2.
Oh, sounds good, man.
And yeah, so that's been our main story playthrough of Pokemon Black and White. Like I said, next time we're going to talk about post game and events, and post game is going to last a few episodes because there's a lot to do, a lot of places to re explore, and we can finally fish.
It's been a very long time coming.
Like, legit, like, what happens to the old rod and the good rod? No, we don't get that at all. We don't get to experience fishing and relaxing until after the big questions have been asked and resolved. They haven't been resolved at all. The only question that's been resolved is Getsus an asshole? And yeah, he is.
Getsus is an he was big bad minute one. Like, come on, boys. Why did it take so long?
Like, it took us until the right before the last gym. And then he was like, oh, I am the leader of Team Plasma. Like, yeah, no, as if we didn't.
Come on, man.
So I don't want to talk about story or anything like that post-game, but post-game we do get new wallpapers for our boxes in the Pokemon Center. And as soon as that happened, I went and changed them all to the Team Plasma background.
That's pretty cool.
All of them are just Team Plasma background. I defeated them. I am the king of Plasma now. And I kind of want to do an episode where, and this will be after Black 2 and White 2, where I summarize my experience of White and White 2 and involve more character and lore into Lucian and Camelo, who are the protagonists I'm playing as. So Team Rocket is going to be involved in that. And now Team Plasma, guess who rules it now? Actually, do you have any predictions you want to make now, or do you want to wait until after we're done with post-game stuff?
No, not really. This game can basically go in any direction at this point. And not to mention the fact that I keep getting my ass kicked by these Route 13 trainers. They're all level 65, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing that thankfully doesn't go into story. As soon as you hit post-game, there are new areas to explore. And they're all instantly level 60 plus for trainers. And the Elite Four is instantly level 75 plus.
Big fat oof.
Yeah. Lots of fun. Lots of fun. I think for the Elite Four, for White 2, you're going to see a lot of me using a lot of the event Pokemon, the mystery gift Pokemon, because they're level 100 and I just don't want to deal with that.
I feel that.
But yeah, I think that wraps up today's episode. So I feel like now would be a good time for a very deep and meaningful end card. So whatever you got for us, Mr. Shrimp.
All right. So I think logistically, there should really only be one, maybe two more episodes of this specific playthrough. Because there's a lot
to do. I would say two or three.
There is still a lot to do, but a lot of it is, you know, going out, catching Pokemon, doing side stuff, doing like mystery gift stuff. I think that we could talk about that. But, you know, yeah. I think for the most part, we're pretty much done. And I'm pretty happy with it, you know. It's been a really, really long journey. We've been at this for quite some time, you know, and we've had a lot of new experiences that, you know, are going to stick with us. And I really appreciate that about this game. So thank everybody for listening, if you indeed still are. And, yeah, I don't know what we're going to do next, but it's definitely going to be interesting and new, and it's going to be we're going to put our all into it. So thank you guys so much for listening to that.
Yeah. So we've planned this since Gen 5, or actually since Pokemon Go Fest. And that was what month?
God, that was like August.
April?
Hold on, August. Let me, I have the badge for it. Let me just check it. Go Fest.
Yeah.
Drive to Investigate.
So we've been planning this GoFest, but we officially started this project in September. We've been at it for 2 months. So I feel like the next game will take about 2 months. We'll probably end this Unovan project in like late January, mid-February. But we've been at it for 2 months. And that may not seem like a long time, but with game cycles, we've been through like 2 seasons, actually. That's not that long. Still, 2 months, I feel like, is a long time for this type of games, especially after seeing someone complete Pokemon Red in an hour.
Good for them. Good. I don't even know how you did that. Good
super speed run. I'll send you a link. But, oh my god. With all these people doing challenges like speedruns of Pokemon Red, someone completing Pokemon Platinum without taking any damage. And things like that. Doing something like this and not doing a Nuzlocke challenge feels so good. Because we can enjoy the game.
You can do a Nuzlocke after you 100% the game once, and then you can do a Nuzlocke and be like, all right, whatever. And none of these Pokemon matter.
No, this was my Team We Try playthrough. I'm keeping it as it is. But I had a lot of fun with it. So, honestly, my take back from this nostalgic game are the moral questions it brings up. And like I said, these apply to real life as well. So if you've played through it and you know which questions I'm talking about, definitely take it into account for real life. As usual, thank you for listening. It's an honor hosting here on Team We Tried. And there's a lot to go through. If you guys like this and like what we're going to do with Black 2 and White 2, I was thinking about doing a Nuzlocke or a quote-unquote Nuzlocke I've never seen anyone do for other games. Can you beat it without spending money?
That would be hell. Actually, that wouldn't be too bad. I think a really bad
challenge. No, healing and stuff is great. Yeah. Like buying items, you can't do that. Buying Pokeballs, you can't do that.
God, that would suck.
Only the thing you're given and you find.
Yeah, that would fucking suck. Yo, there's one challenge that I didn't want to. I wanted to see if any of my friends could beat it, because I know you can, but I wanted to see if any of my friends could. It was if you. Can you beat the game without going to Pokemon centers? Like, essentially what it boils down to is no free healing whatsoever. No beds, no Pokemon centers. The only time you can heal is when the game forces you to heal. Like that. But you can use your items and stuff.
I've seen that. That was the guy in Emerald. No. No, don't do that. Don't do that. That's terrible. That's absolute terrible. Yo, man. No.
Crazy.
That being said, I hope everyone has a great night. 2020 is coming to a close. It's like a month away. So we're going to have a lot more Team We Try things. Also, if you like last year's Christmas episode, our sequel is coming up this year, which means I have to find something that's not last year's 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. I need another Christmassy introduction. I've been thinking about it since last year. I got
a month to figure it out. No, it's less like, oh yeah, don't worry. More like, yeah, you got a month to figure it out.
I hope you guys enjoyed this. Have a wonderful